Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Connolly, and Judge Larkin. The Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning, Council. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are here now for our third case on our oral calendar for this morning, which is A21-1714, Ross R. Lundstrom et al. Appellants versus Township of Florence Respondent, State of Minnesota Defendant. Council, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellants, you have 5 minutes rebuttal if you choose to use it. At the start of your principal arguments, please each of you state your name and the parties you represent for the record. We're conducting this argument via Zoom, and there will be an audio recording of it later on our public website. Counsel for appellants, if you are ready to begin, go ahead.
Your Honor. My name is Charles Richardson, and I'm representing the appellants in this matter. May I proceed?
Please do. Thank you.
This appeal is from an amended order and memo dated November 1, 2021, by which the district court denied appellant's motion for summary judgment and granted township's motion to dismiss appellant's claims and granted township's motion seeking a declaration that the subject roads, that is, parts of Barton Street and Bay Street, are platted, unopened roads held by the township for the public with all rights. Appellants, in the conclusion to their brief, asked the Court of Appeals to reverse both the denial of their motion for summary judgment and the granting of the township's motion. The thrust of the arguments in their briefs has been for the reversal of the denial of their motion for summary judgment and for direction to the district court to enter some summary judgment in their favor. But appellants also asked the Court of Appeals, to consider their citation of law, agreed upon facts and arguments as a legitimate basis for reversing the order granting the township's motions.
Counsel, Judge Larkin here, I have a question.
Yeah.
I see the relief you requested in your complaint.
Right.
On what basis do you seek that relief? In other words, what authority do you cite to the district court to say, here's the authority to do what we're asking you to do?
The Marketable Title Act.
Okay. Does the Marketable Title Act set forth a procedure whereby a landowner can ask the court to declare that the landowner is the fee owner of a particular parcel?
What the Marketable Title Act does is give a holder of a fee interest in property the right to get rid of interests other than the fee interest. The landowner.
I agree with that. But the problem I'm having is you didn't necessarily ask the district court to do that. You asked the district court to declare that your clients are the owners of the property at issue, as opposed to asking the district court to, for example, make a declaration that the township didn't file the adequate notice and therefore the township can't attempt to enforce its easement.
It's on that basis, that it's on the basis of the Marketable Title Act, that we asked the court to find that the appellants have the fee ownership interest free of any interest on the part of the township by virtue of platted streets.
You can go ahead, Mr. Richardson.
Okay, in their motion for summary judgment, appellants asked the district court to award them the fee simple interest in those parts of Barton Street and Bay Street described in their motion for summary judgment, free of any interest in those parts by the Township of Florence because they are platted streets. The legal basis of appellant's motion is the Marketable Title Act. The MTA provides that against a claim of title based on a source of title that has been of record for at least 40 years, no political division of the state, among other entities, may bring an action to enforce a right, claim, or interest founded upon an instrument which was executed more than 40 years prior to the commencement of such action. The claim of appellants is the fee simple interest for that part of Barton Street and Bay Street described in their motion.
Mr. Richardson, I'm just going to interrupt you for one moment. I think when you lean away from your mic, it gets a little muffled. So make sure you're close to it.
Is this better?
I think so. Go ahead.
The claim of title of appellants is the fee simple interest to that part of Barton Street and Bay Street described in their motion for summary judgment, free of any claim of the Township of Florence because that part is platted as a street. To succeed under the MTA, appellants must have a source of title, that is a fee simple interest, in those parts of Barton Street and Bay Street that they have a claim of title to that has been of record at least 40 years. The MTA cannot provide a foundation for title. It does not act as a sword, but rather as a shield. Appellants.
So, counsel, and I'm going to stop you because I have so many questions, and I think the panel members do. So you don't need to recite to us the statute.
Okay.
My question is this. Are you attempting to get new title, or do you have title to those parcels?
We have title.
Okay. So you have title as a result of a presumption, which says when somebody dedicates a public road, the presumption is that grantor is conveying title to the adjacent lots. Is that it?
No, not quite.
What is it?
The law is that if you have title to a platted lot, you have the fee simple interest to the center line of streets adjoining the lot.
Unless somebody would establish that was not the intent of the grantor.
That's right.
Okay.
But the presumption is that when you buy a platted lot, you have the fee simple interest to the center line of streets adjoining that lot. And I cited in my briefs authority for that proposition. So,
does the record contain the deed or other paper in which the grantor granted or dedicated the public road?
A record or the road was platted in the plat of Frontenac.
Understood. But what I'm asking is there any evidence from which a court could consider whether the presumption of ownership to the center of the road should not apply because there's evidence that indicates that the grantor intended to reserve ownership of the land for himself?
No.
Right. Can you tell me in your view as to the dispute or any dispute regarding who owns the land under the platted road? Who's the dispute between?
The dispute is between the town of Florence because this plat is within the township of Florence and the fee owners adjoining Barton Street and Bay Street. And
let me ask this. Am I understanding the law correctly in saying, you know, one of two people own this land? It's either the adjacent property owners or the grantor of the original public use easement to the city or to the township. I mean, there's no argument that the township owns this land, correct?
Well, the township has an easement for the street.
Understood.
But the underlying fee ownership we're asserting is owned by the owners of the lots adjacent to the streets. I can't hear you.
Saying the only potential other owner of the land out of the street would be the original grantor, correct?
That's right, but that was done in 1857.
So he's not around to sue or to participate in this?
No.
So then how does, I mean, is it your position then, well, that was done in 1857, we don't even have the documents showing how it was done, therefore we win? the presumption applies in favor of the adjacent land owners, and there's nothing to litigate in terms of who owns the land.
My view is that the owners in fee of the adjacent lots own to the center line of Barton Street, and then they own the fee of Bay Street between their lot and Lake Pepin, which is part of the
Let me ask this. The statute says, in terms of, you know, the landowner who is trying to prevent the exercise of an easement over adjacent land, the statute says something about recorded fee title. So, you know, the case law talks about, well, you own to, there's a presumption that the owner of adjacent land owns to the center of the street, even though the portion to the center of the street is not described in the landowner's deed.
That's right.
Does the recording requirement kind of get us to the place, well, you know, that presumption's not good enough. If you want to come in and ask for relief under the MTA, you need to, you know, get a declaration that the presumption applies. There's no evidence to suggest it wouldn't, and therefore adjust your title to show that, and then you would have the ability to claim relief under the MTA.
I think that's, in fact, what I'm doing under the MTA.
But can you, under the MTA, and I'm not trying to argue, it's very confusing. If you weren't going to use the MTA to say, hey, under case law, we own to the middle of the road, we want our title modified to reflect that, how would you do it other than the MTA?
We would ask for a vacation of the street.
And then that would automatically get you there.
That would get you there.
Okay.
Because what the vacation would do, Judge, is it would get rid of the street. And if the street is gotten rid of, then the fee title.
Gone. And we have case law saying that that's how, what happens when a street is vacated, right?
Right.
So why didn't you just ask for vacation of the street here? What authority says you can do what you're doing under the MTA?
Well, there's quite a bit of authority. The statute itself says that it applies to units of government. I cite that in my brief.
I agree, but my concern is this, that the statute is written in a way that says a person with this interest or this fee simple title can prevent another landowner from attempting to exercise rights if the right to do so has not been filed with notice. So it seems to be sort of defensive. But I'm hearing what you're saying about, well, you've got to establish you have title, and I'm just wondering if this is the proper way to do it, or do you ask to vacate the street, which seems then to result in an automatic finding that you own half the street and we don't have this issue.
Pardon me, Judge. We didn't ask to vacate the street because we figured the township wouldn't do it. And this was an alternative way of doing it. And in my opinion, when you follow through with the statute, I believe we're justified in doing what we did. And I go through all these arguments in my brief, how the law applies.
No, and I appreciate that, but there's a lot of nooks and crannies. And yeah. when you look at, you know, these 20 cases and say, how do we make this all fit together? What does it mean? That's why I'm asking these questions.
I think that the statute is, oh, pardon me, Judge.
I had one question, Mr. Richardson. If the day before you filed your lawsuit, Mr. Devaney's client started putting bulldozers to kind of formalize the road, would you lose?
We might have if there was possession, but there's been no possession.
Well, let's say they just started putting cones. Like, okay, bulldozers are coming. Here's kind of the road. Here are the cones. Would that have worked a day before you filed this lawsuit?
I'm just not sure, Judge, about that.
But in any event, how many, you know, this is what, 1857?
Right.
And up till, I'm sorry, when did you file the lawsuit, 20?
21, I think.
21. So in that, I don't know, I can't do the math, more than 100 years.
165 years.
You know, I mean, if Mr. Devaney's client had wanted to put the build, finally build the road, they could have built the road, right?
I think so.
And they didn't.
They didn't.
So presumably, okay, that's it, nothing.
Could you discuss possession a little bit? I know the district court didn't rely on that, but what does possession mean in this context?
Possession means, possession in this context means that which would put a prudent person on notice of the interest of the possessor. That's what it means.
Okay, and so here in this case, the plaintiffs or the appellants here, as I understand it, they've kind of, I hate to say encroached, but this is part of my yard, here's my garden. I mean, right. Anybody who looked at this, are they going to see things on the subject property that's associated with the homeowners around it? Or are they going to say, see things that indicate to them this is meant to be a city street?
They'd see the development or the use of the property owners of this property. Okay. That's what they would see. There's no
so is it all grass? I mean, is there anything that indicates there's supposed to be a street right here?
No, there's no cement, there's nothing, there's no markings on the park, nothing. And what you see is really an extensive garden that's been built on this area, and then a yard.
So there's no dirt. I mean, what makes this case different from other cases is, you know, it's kind of like, well, everybody knows that's kind of the dirt road, how you get to from A to B, and everyone's driving up and down it, you know.
No. There's no
nothing
evidence
like that. So it's it's kind of grass in your client's garden.
Right.
Is there anything else, Mr. Richardson? You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay.
Beg your pardon?
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. Mr. Devaney, go ahead.
May it please the court. My name is Josh Devaney, and I represent the Township of Florence in this matter. And if I may direct your attention to page 9 of appellant's addendum. Now, the plat shown on that page at issue here predates statehood. It's an 1857 plat of Westervelt, later named the plat of Frontenac. When someone purchases property within this plat, they know exactly what they're getting, as the deeds they acquire, like plaintiff's deeds in this case, cite to this plat.
So can I just ask, just to set this up a little bit? So this is platted property. I think the deeds were written in reference to lot and block, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so, but I assume it's not the town, like let's say this comes up in a different context and township vacates the road. Township doesn't have an interest in who owns the land underneath the road at that point. If there was a debate, for example, among property owners, the town wouldn't care, not your issue, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so I think that, I mean, as I understand the argument here is, although it says lot, the appellant's argument, although it's like granted by lot and block number, which doesn't include then the road because it's a lot, that by operation of law, when it says that in platted property, there's an associated presumption that it would include the up to the center of the road or the whole road if you're on the water side. And so therefore the deed that's written in that way is a source of title to the underlying property. And that gets them in the door. I'm going to guess you probably have some arguments against Marotska or might not agree, but we're in the world of that case. And so what's wrong with that argument, absent other evidence that there's some other intention that the grantor had, you know, that you could trace through the deeds, that when the deeds are related to lots and there's a presumption that's not rebutted that you own to the center, what's wrong? Why isn't that a source of title that gets you past the first part of the statute?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think the issue here is that there's sort of two tracks going on at the same time. There's a legislative track, which created the Marketable Title Act. And then there's the judicial tract, which created essentially all of the other case law that deals with what a platted public road is, what an unopened road is, and how that works and how that operates for purposes of ownership and for rights of plat owners. So under the Marketable Title Act, it very specifically defines what it means as a source of title. And a source of title refers the only portion that could it could refer to that would matter in this case is deed. And it is clear from the town of Belle Prairie v. Kyber, which we cite on page 7 of our brief, that a claim of title based on a source of title, which has been a record at least 40 years, is a reference to fee simple ownership as shown in a deed. Now, that is what the Marketable Title Act says. So it's looking at deeds specifically. Now,
what is your cite for that proposition? That it's only a deed?
For that proposition, we are citing to Town of Belle Prairie, where it states that the term—
Can I have the cite, please?
Sure. Town of Belle Prairie, 448 Northwest 2nd at 378 through 79. The term source of title refers to recorded fee simple ownership.
So let me ask just to make clear, is it your position, or do you even have a position as a town, as to whether, for example, if the road were vacated, that these appellants own to the center of the road?
We would agree that the appellants would own to the center of the road as pursuant to Boland.
Right. So I think, as I understand your argument, is that for purposes of the MTA, you look at only the deed description, even though, in fact, if the road were to be vacated later, the holders of that deed might, in fact, have a presumption that's not rebutted that they own to the center. Right. You're saying for the MTA purposes, you don't look at that because you didn't even talk about White in your brief, I don't think. I think that, as I understand your argument, tell me if I'm wrong, you look at the deed for purposes of this act and you don't have to figure out whether, oh, yes, in the event the road went away, someone actually, in fact, owns that and always has owned to the center of the road, because that's not relevant to the MTA. Am I understanding it right?
Correct, Your Honor. And that's the same thing that was found by Padernos, that was found by Reed's Landing, that was found by Township of Pepin, is that what matters is what's in the deed. Adjacent ownership is insufficient for purposes of the Marketable Title Act to establish a source of title based on or a claim of title based upon a source of title.
And I guess that might make some sense, because for all we know, you might have different evidence or different landowners in dispute, et cetera, if the road were to go away. And that's not really, they're not really part of an action under the MTA of one property owner versus town.
Correct, Your Honor.
It seems like it's a different potential battle that wouldn't include all the same property owners. Parties, rather.
Correct, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Devaney, are you saying because the deed is silent, because the original grant is silent as to what this particular property is, what happens to it, that's why you win?
I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that the market.
Well, then why do you win?
We win, Your Honor, because we have a dedicated under a plat easement to the public, and that that plat dedicated easement accrues to all of the plat owners its specific rights, and those rights are not extinguished under the Marketable Title Act unless appellant here is able to show that they have a claim of title based upon a source of title to that land. The only way they can do that here is through their deeds.
Let me ask you this. I'm not understanding that, because the statute pretty clearly says that if the recipient of the easement hasn't provided notice of intent to exercise it, they no longer can do so. So it seems to me kind of to turn things on its head to say, well, even though we're well past 40 years, no one can really stop us from doing this. I mean, if we accept sort of your argument that, well, this title isn't good enough, then doesn't the 40-year deadline go out the window? Because even though the statute says the city cannot now attempt to enforce this easement, you're saying, well, too bad, there's no one who can stop us.
So first, Your Honor, the plat itself was recorded, and every single time a deed is transferred in that plat, it is essentially re-referenced, re-recorded. But secondly,
our recent decision says recording the plat is not good enough. You've got to comply with the specific notice requirements of the statute of the MTA, yes?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, in part, the Minnesota Supreme Court has been clear that a statutory dedication is effective without acceptance by the public. That's found in Schaller v. Town of Florence in 259.
What's the date on that case?
1935.
Okay. So isn't the problem there that the MTA comes along later? I mean, you've got these old cases that says when there's a public dedication use for road, the city can choose to use the road whenever it wants to do so. But then you have later legislation, the MTA saying, essentially you snooze, you lose. If somebody has granted you a right to use an easement and you don't within 40 years provide notice as described in the statute that you intend to use the easement's gone because we don't want there to be any encumbrance on title.
Yes, Your Honor. So I have 2 points there. First, the Minnesota Supreme Court in interpreting the Marketable Title Act has noted that there is a purpose stated in that Marketable Title Act. And that purpose is that it's supposed to ensure clarity of title, essentially certainty of title is what is at issue here. And in interpreting the statute, the Minnesota Supreme Court has made clear that they're to keep in mind that the legislature does not intend a result that is absurd, unreasonable, and it intends to favor the public interest as against any private interest. That's Wickelman v. Mesner, 83 Northwest 2nd.
Well, you know, I believe in all of that. That seems like good principles of law. Now let's kind of go to this case. So are you telling me if we waited another 100 years and there's, you know, and Mr. Richardson's clients are still, you know, having the garden, you're telling me the city still has this easement?
Yes, Your Honor. Under established case law, easements are permanent and an unopened public road remains an interest in the public until the time of its choosing for opening that. And that has been affirmed as recently as Bolin v. Glass.
Does the grant say that you have a road on this land? And that shall ever be, and shall forever be a road because, you know, in 1857, am I going there? You know, was it 1857?
1857 was the date.
Okay, because, you know, by God, roads are America. And I'm just going to say, no matter what, in the future, roads are going to be great. I mean, the grant doesn't say that, does it?
No, what the grant says is that it grants a permanent easement for access. And access here is important because what we're talking about is access to a lake. And that lake then gives rights to the public. But,
okay, but you haven't used that access for 150 years. So that argument rings a little hollow.
Under established case law, the township doesn't have to open that. Yes.
Counsel, I just took a look at the case you cited to me for the proposition that it must be written in the deed. I don't see any language in that case saying it must be written in the deed. Can you point me to the language in, what are you having us look at? Town of Belle Prairie that says it has to be in the deed. It just says it has to be recorded.
Yeah, so apologies for cutting you off here, but that is what that is what I'm referring to. The term source of title refers to recorded fee simple ownership.
Well, so, we have recorded fee. The other side's argument is they have recorded fee simple ownership of these adjacent lots. And under case law, that fee simple ownership includes to the center of the road. Why isn't that adequate? I mean, this case doesn't say it must be written in a deed. And in fact, this case says the Kliblers submitted no evidence of fee simple ownership. Well, here we've got people who say, here's my deed. And under case law, because I'm next to this land, and there's no evidence that the grantor of that land didn't convey title to that land with the plat next to it or with the lot next to it, I have my recorded fee simple ownership includes to the center, even though it's not written in the deed.
That's the exact fact pattern found in Pedernos v. City of Nisswa, where this Court of Appeals found that regardless of the fact that the owner in that case owned both properties adjacent to the roadway, so they owned both sides, they would have owned the entire underlying fee of that roadway, they still did not have a claim, a source of title based upon a claim of title pursuant to the Marketable Title Act in order to extinguish a platted public road. And
in that case, did anybody make these arguments? Did we consider and reject this argument?
The Paderno's court would have been aware of the underlying fee argument. The only reason to reference the adjacent ownership is for purposes of establishing ownership via underlying fee. And Your Honor, Muratska, to be clear here, got the law wrong. In its decision, what it did was it overturned years and years of both Minnesota Supreme Court precedent, which made clear that a statutory dedication is effective without acceptance by the public. And it overturned essentially the rulings of this court in Paderno's, in Reed's Landing, and in Baalbach.
So how would the city feel if we stayed this appeal and ordered that status quo be maintained pending resolution of the petition for review in that case, including status quo as in, no, you're not putting up cones and doing all these things to establish possession now that you're aware that somebody's trying to enforce the MTA?
The township would have no issue with a decision this matter being stayed until the appeal in Muratska is resolved.
With the stipulation I just made, maintain status quo in the meantime?
Yes, Your Honor.
So is it fair to say, counsel, as I'm understanding things, I appreciate, not surprised by your perspective about that case, but even under current conditions, I mean, Paderno's is a little bit, or however you say that name, is a little bit unusual because there might have been facts that made it clearer. Yeah. There's a reduction, I think, in the price for it that he simply did not buy the land underneath the road. But again, you don't, I think, the town's interest is not what would happen should the town, the road be vacated, who owns it. But I do think, and you would agree with me, that there's no, that the case law where lot, the deeds contain lots and block numbers, that that's it, that, that we have held, including in an unpublished decision fallback that the parties talked about, that that's insufficient under the MTA.
Yes,
now, maybe later the person would be determined to have the ownership of it, but it's insufficient under the MTA. And that there's no case at this point that applies the MTA in sort of an affirmative fashion like this, where there's lot, where the deeds are by lot number, that in fact recognizes the there's satisfaction of the first element by virtue of the presumption of ownership to the center of the road. I mean, it would be an expansion at the very least of those cases. Is that fair to say?
Correct, Your Honor. And the only way that Muratska even gets there is by distinguishing itself. It reaffirms Paderno's and distinguishes itself only by citing a chain of deeds that predates the establishment of the plat, which we do not have in this case.
Are there other questions?
Yeah, I'm looking Paderno's and it's quoting Weichelman. I mean, I think there's this concept out here. The statute, MTA does not operate to provide a foundation for new title. Is a person really seeking new title if what they're saying is my existing title includes this additional land?
Your Honor, as was discussed, the title that a person has to that underlies a road is only title that they essentially receive when that underlying roadway is vacated, or sorry, when that overlying roadway is vacated. So in that way,
a new title would be issued sought and issued at that point, which includes the...
Correct, Your Honor. In that point, the deed would then be changed there. But here, where we have a situation where they're not looking to affirm their title, they're looking to extinguish a pre-existing public right-of-way, a public right-of-way that the rights accrue to all of the plat owners who are not named in this case, a public roadway that under existing case law, they don't even have authority to challenge the existence of.
Can you just answer for me, because I'm not understanding, to the extent this statute sets a 40-year deadline on a town to exercise its easement right, or not even to exercise it, a 40-year deadline to file notice saying, we plan to exercise this easement right, in which case I tend to agree with you, then they kick back into that older case law saying, you know, you can have until the end of time to do this. But the statute seems to require the town to do something, to file that notice as set forth in the statute, thereby preserving its right to forever use this easement. Accepting your position that what appellants are trying to do here is not good enough, how are you not eviscerating that 40-year deadline?
And I understand your question. And
how is how is anybody ever going to enforce that deadline?
So the difficulty here is that first, all townships, all cities, they've been relying on the case law that was in place prior to Muratska, and I can promise you that there are thousands and tens of thousands of roadways that are by dedication, by plat only, that if under Muratska's ruling cease to exist, that they're, when your question as to whether there should be this recording, again, we would cite to the plat as being the recording here. I know Muratska, which we were arguing got it wrong, says that's improper, but the Supreme Court case law on that post Marketable Title Act is still clear that there isn't a necessary acceptance requirement by a public of an easement that upon dedication, it's construed as being accepted.
But that is, to take that approach, we have to say we wrongly decided Muratska.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well, I can tell you we're not going to do that. So what's the next argument?
The next argument would just be that Muratska was only able to arrive at its opinion by distinguishing itself from Paternos by saying that the chain of title preceded, in fact, the establishment of this easement. But here in this case, we do not have that fact pattern.
And on Paternos, I'm looking at it and, you know, you're saying, well, the court was presumed to have known about this rule taking you halfway to the middle of the adjacent road. But I mean, it's odd to me that we said he did not purchase the roadway property when he bought the resort and has not claimed, nor has he presented any evidence to support a claim of adverse possession. I mean, that doesn't sound to me like, oh, and we had in the back of our minds this rule and we rejected it. I mean, I just think, quite frankly, we didn't consider the argument that's being made.
Yes, Your Honor. I would also cite to Reed's Landing and Baalbach as holding the same with the same sets of facts. And Baalbach even decided after Bolin v. Glass in 2008, and Bolin v. Glass is probably the pinnacle decision that makes very clear ownership of underlying fee to a platted road. And Bolin v. Glass, by the way, was a roadway that was unopened. There was no notice submitted or anything like that. But it was decided by the Supreme Court that the rights of the public still existed for use of that roadway. I know I'm out of time. My final point, Your Honors, is that what the Marketable Title Act wants is certainty of title. In a in ruling instead that the Marketable Title Act can extinguish public easements unless there's a lengthy historical review of the exact use of the road over this an exact period, or is something that rather than avoids these types of issues of uncertainty of title and of lengthy historical review, it doubles down on that the existing frame that a property law as to platted public roads had certainty. Everyone was able to refer to a plat to have a common knowledge of what was owned, what was a public access, and what wasn't. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Counsel. And Mr. Richardson, you have at least 5 minutes for rebuttal. We went a little over here, so be flexible with you.
I would say that the Weichelman case indicates that the MTA is a mechanism to relieve a title from the servitude of provisions contained in ancient records, which fetter the marketability of real estate. That's what the Weichelman case states as the purpose of the MTA. I would point out that there are certain holdings of the Muratska case, which I believe are relevant, if not dispositive, to the case here. The first is that no interest can be asserted against a claim of title based on the source of title unless the notice requirement of the MTA is complied with. And the Muratska case had to do with a platted street in a township. Number two, that the plain language of the MTA unambiguously encompasses dedications made by a recorded plat. Number three, that the MTA applies to every right, claim, interest, or encumbrance founded by an instrument, event, or transaction that is at least 40 years old. And number four, that a township abandons its interest in a town road when it does not record its interest in the road within 40 years in accordance with the MTA. The Maratska Court held that the dedication of a street by a private landowner to the public does not convey the fee title to the land, but rather conveys a terminable interest easement only in the area designated in the plat for public use. The significance of Maratska for the case at hand is that the fee simple interest underlying a platted street was found to be a source of title for purposes of the MTA. And Maratska distinguished the Padros case. And the specific language is this, but unlike in Padros, Mr. Devaney is correct that the applicant owned on both sides of a road. And he's right that the district court found that the MTA could not provide a foundation for a new title, and therefore that the claimant did not have a requisite source of title. But this is what Maratska said. Unlike the resort owner in Padros, who did not have a source of title for the roadway land, Maratska has not invoked the MTA to establish a foundation for a new title. Instead, the trust, as successor in interest to parcels 1, 2, and 3, retained fee simple ownership of the roadway, which was merely encumbered by an easement created by the 1911 to 1912 dedication. In our case, we are not invoking the MTA to establish a foundation for a new title. We have a source of title in those parts of Barton Street and Bay Street at issue, because we have a fee simple interest in that. Also, the Baalbek case. In the Baalbek case, what the court found is that the claimant had not introduced any evidence of a fee simple title. Judge Larkin's comment was the argument that I'm making considered in these cases. I don't see any evidence that it was. I don't see that those evidence were rejected in any way, but in the Baalbek case, there was no evidence submitted of a fee simple interest in the roadway. We have submitted that evidence and provided case law which supports it.
What evidence? In both cases, there's the deed.
Yeah,
what you've added is a legal argument, arguably, but not different evidence, right?
Yeah,
I've been here before. Could you respond to the difference between our Court of Appeals cases, between Paternos and the argument that Paternos is different because the deeds related to property that preceded the encumbrance that was later placed through of the dedication of the road?
I'm not sure about that argument, Your Honor. In Padros, as I understand it, there was a road and the applicant owned on both sides of the road. And the court found that he was trying to create a foundation for title. In our case, and evidently didn't argue that his deeds carried with them center line to the fee ownership to the center line of the roads. Our case, we're arguing that. And the Padros or the Maratska case differentiates Padros in exactly that way.
Is there anything else from my colleagues here or Mr. Richardson?
Not for me, thank you.
Very good. Thank you both. The case is submitted. Thank you for your briefing and your arguments.
If I could say this, it's quite interesting, the statute, quite interesting.
Well, we'll enjoy continuing to struggle with it. Thank you.
That's an understatement.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you both. Case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in the statutory timeframe. Thanks.